Is everybody awake? Well, help me stay awake. Every time we change our time twice a year, I still wake up at the time I usually have been used to in the previous months, like 5 o'clock this morning, and only it was 4. So listen real well so I can stay awake. Several weeks ago, maybe months, Austin had a lesson in regard to this fellow we're looking at this morning, Joseph. Austin asked the question that, or presented the question that Joseph may have asked, why me? Why me did my brothers treat me the way that they do? Why me did they sell me into slavery? Why me? Because I was put in prison. Why me? Because I was forgotten there in prison. Very fine lesson, and in no way do I want to add to it or subtract from it. But it set me to thinking a little more about temptation and what we can learn from the temptations of Joseph. Temptation is one of the oldest conflicts. Let's see if I can get the PowerPoint to go here. Temptation is one of the oldest conflicts that we have within our living the life of Christ. There we go. We'll call it resisting temptation. There's not a person, including Christ, who has not struggled with it. And except for Christ, there's not a person who hasn't suffered the consequences of yielding to temptation. Jesus was the only one that, even though he was tempted, he did not yield to it. If you picked up the family news, you can keep yourself awake by filling in the blanks on the fourth page. There are three types of temptation. Material, as I've called it here, is a lust for things. It can be as large as a house. It can be as small as a ring. It can be as dazzling as a new car, or as faded and nicked as an old grandfather clock. But when we lust after things, that's the first category that I have, material temptations. And then I have personal temptations. Is a temptation for status. Some people expend all their energy trying to gain special recognition, fame, power, or riches. And sometimes they sacrifice friends and family, whatever gets in their way, to possess the title or the position or the status. And then there is sensual temptation, which is a lust for another person. It is the desire to enjoy the body of another individual when such pleasure is not legally or morally permissible. Regardless of the kind of temptation, all of us know the frustration of trying to stop monstrous lust with a weak will. In our lesson today, we want to look at Joseph, memorable example, and see how he resisted the seductive enticements of sensual temptation. So we're going to only look at the third one there, Open your Bibles again, and I appreciate Evan reading the scripture, but we're going to look at a few verses a block at a time. Have your Old Testament with you, Genesis the 29th chapter, I mean the 39th chapter, sorry. In verse 1 and 2, it says, "Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian masters." In these first two verses, there are two things that are conspicuous by their absence. First, there is no mention of how long Joseph had been down there as a slave in Potiphar's house. We don't know. He could have been there for a few months or a few years. So that makes the story a little bit, well, how long was he there for some of us who want to know things like that? The second thing that is conspicuous by its absence is there's no mention of Joseph having difficulty adjusting as a slave in a foreign land and in a foreign culture. Have you ever thought about that? This young fellow, and he was young as he was taken down there, and how long he has been there now in Potiphar's house, we don't know, but how difficult was it for him to make the adjustment? You recall that he was used to a doting father, and he had privileges that exempted him from the menial tasks that his brothers had to do. Now he had to obey the commands of Potiphar, the chief officer of Pharaoh's army or house or soldiers. And now in Potiphar's house, he has to do menial tasks. But we don't know. It doesn't tell us how long he'd been there or how he adjusted to or not to that culture and what he was expected of, except we'll find out something in a moment. But this verse also says God was blessing Joseph in his life, and coupled with Joseph's personal integrity and hard work, it led to his being promoted to a place of prominence. Read verse 3 and 4 with me. "His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him," that is Potiphar, "made Joseph overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had." Now in one way we might say, well, he adjusted pretty well. He was able to conduct himself in such a way that Potiphar put him over his old house. And that might be a good conclusion. But notice that Joseph did not tell Potiphar that the Lord was with him. Verse 3 says, "His master saw that God was with him." Verse 4 says, "Joseph found favor in Potiphar's sight." Not that Joseph requested favors from Potiphar. Joseph earned the right to be respected and trusted. Verse 5 and 6. "From the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and in field, so that he left all that he had," that is, Potiphar, "left all that he had in Joseph's charge." By now, Joseph's Midas touch, as we might call it, in personal integrity, had inspired Potiphar to have absolute confidence and trust in Joseph. And along with that, he had a great measure of responsibility. And Potiphar gave great freedom to Joseph. But in a situation like this, sometimes temptation comes sneaking up behind us. The great benefits that Joseph had, the great comforts that sometimes we have, temptation comes sneaking up behind us, as it were. I have a quotation here from F.B. Meyer's book, Joseph, Beloved, Hated, Exalted. And he says what I just got through saying, but let me read it. He says, we may expect temptation in days of prosperity and ease rather than in those of privation and toil. Not where men frown, but where they smile sweet, exquisite smiles of flattery. It is there where there's the smiles of sweet, exquisite flattery. It is there, Mr. Meyer says, it is there that the temptress lies in wait. Beware, if thou goest armed anywhere, thou must above all go armed here. In a time of great respect, prosperity, if you will, picture Joseph in the household, elevated to over everything. Things were going well. And that's when the temptress came. And I'm saying that's many times when it is for us. Genesis, the 39th chapter, we find that it says in verse 6, the last part of it, and because of him there was no concern about anything but the food that he ate. Finishing this brief narrative, we find that it says Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And that probably leads to the sensual temptation that he is faced with. While Mr. Potiphar is appreciating Joseph and how he's a man of integrity, he's a man who will do what is good and right for Potiphar. He's reliable in the business sense, trustworthy in nature. Well, Mr. Potiphar is like that. Mrs. Potiphar is becoming increasingly occupied with Joseph's good looks. Verse 7. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, lie with me. Joseph immediately and politely refuses. He tries first to appeal to her reason. And second, he tries to appeal to her conscience. Look at verse 8 and 9. But he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that is his in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Joseph tried to appeal to her. But Mrs. Potiphar wasn't moved, not one bit. She isn't interested in the sanctity of her marriage or the trust between her husband and Joseph. No, she's not interested in that. She's only interested in gratifying her physical lust now. Nothing else. It's no wonder then that Joseph's spiritual concern could not penetrate the darkness that shrouded her mind when he appealed to her. Look, your husband has put me all over all the house. except for you. And how can we do this great evil, wickedness, and sin against God? Now, there's some peculiar elements, I guess is what I've called it here, in Joseph's temptation. Let's pause for a moment and clarify some of the specifics of Joseph's situation. First, Joseph faced a difficult dilemma. In the very place in which he lived and worked, Potiphar's household, it brought him face to face with one very seductive tempter, Mrs. Potiphar. So, it was a difficult dilemma. He was trusted by Mr. Potiphar, and to the extent, as we know and have read, that he was over all the house. Secondly, her advances surely must have flattered Joseph's ego and aroused a powerful sensual temptation. And I said must have. It doesn't say that, but it would not have been a temptation if he hadn't had some sense of being flattered or ego or whatever. Thirdly, the source of his temptation, Mrs. Potiphar, was persistent. She pursued him, verse 10 says, day after day. And then fourth, this woman pursued Joseph when they were alone. To add to the terrible situation, not only day by day, but when they were alone, she pursued him, when there wouldn't be any fear of detection. Verse 11. It was a vulnerable time for Joseph. His own lust may have worked overtime trying to erode his powers of clear discrimination and decision. It doesn't tell us. But that's what James says is what happens sometimes. Let no man say when he's tempted, I'm tempted of God. James 1, verse 13 through 15. For God does not tempt any man by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he's drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when the desires have conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. The final test for Joseph came when Mrs. Potter resorted to more than just words to lure him to lie with her. Verse 12, she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled out of the house. In almost every instance, when the issue of sensual or sexual temptation is dealt with in the New Testament, we're told to flee. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 18. With some temptations, we are to take a stand against it. But as I said, almost with every sensual, sexual temptation that's mentioned, flee from it. When it comes to sexual lust, we're told to do exactly what Joseph did and get out of there. If we stay, we're likely to give in. Now, there are some ramifications here that Joseph is faced with. We'll read verse 16 through 20 in just a moment. William Congreve is quoted as saying, and I got this from Bartlett's Familiar Quotations, page 324. I've heard this quoted, but in a way that's a little easier to say than what I'm reading here. And you'll hear it as I read it here. He said, heaven has no rage like love to hatred turn. Kind of difficult way of putting it, isn't it? Heaven has no rage like love to hatred turn, nor hell a fury like a woman scorned. All the lust that had smoldered in Potiphar's wife suddenly blazed into fury, and she wanted revenge for her rejection. You know the story, but look, let's look at verse 16 through 20. Well, perhaps we should back up a little bit. In verse 13, continuing from verse 12, he left his garment there in verse 12 and fled out of the house. And as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to them, "See, he has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house." Then she laid his garments by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you brought among us came in to me to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house." And as soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, "This is the way your servant treated me," she said, his, Potiphar's, anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him in the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. Not only is she a vile tempter, she's a liar too, isn't she? But Joseph did the right thing. Once he got outside, he didn't hear the angel sing his praise because he said no. He heard the scream of that woman, as it were, that would hurl him from the heights of Potiphar's house to the depths of a jail cell. Just an aside for a moment. You know, for years, I thought Potiphar probably believed his wife. And to a certain extent, he may have. But you know why I think maybe he didn't fully believe it? That's what I think now. At first glance, Potiphar's reaction to his wife's story may seem to indicate that he believed her. But when you read of Joseph's punishment, it suggests that his Egyptian master wasn't completely convinced. Now, this is my opinion. I understand that, and I'll let you know that. That Potiphar didn't really completely believe her. And here's why I think it is. A normal sentence for a slave guilty of attempted rape was death. That's what the Egyptians would do to a person who attempted to rape someone. They'd put them to death. But Potiphar's position, Pharaoh's officer, kept his sword sheathed and put Joseph in prison. That was unusual. Okay, well, that's my aside. How about practical application for us today? First one, do not be weakened by your situation. Four important insights, I think, to help us say no when our lust says yes. Don't be weakened by your situation. What do I mean here? Well, several aspects of Joseph's position could have easily undercut his resolve to say no to lust. He was handsome. He was alone with Potiphar's wife. He enjoyed a secure and trusted position. His integrity and accomplishments made him the object of praise. And perhaps most dangerously, he had complete autonomy in Potiphar's house. He was accountable to no one except God. Joseph did not allow his eyes to wander from his holy God to the sinful seduction of his situation. So sometimes we can be weakened by the situation in which we find ourselves and tempted, we may give in, but Joseph didn't do that. Don't be deceived by persuasion. Mrs. Potiphar was bold, calculating, and her proposition was tantalizing. Her verbal enticements were probably as loosely clad and suggestive as she might have been loosely clad and suggestive. That's me thinking maybe that's the case again. Perhaps day after day, she might have tried to lure Joseph with just the right combination of tempting words. And notice I said perhaps, because this is not in the text either. With just the right combination of tempting words. My husband doesn't meet my needs. Or who will find out? We're completely safe. Or she may have said, just this once, never again. But her words were in vain, and Joseph's commitment to God completely shut her out. Number three, do not be gentle with your emotions. What we mean by that, be firm like Joseph was. Our emotions may beg and plead for us to open the door to the first tiny thrill of temptation. But we have to learn to keep the door closed like Joseph did. Verse 8, it says, he refused. Verse 9, he calls her words this great evil and sin against God. In verse 10, he didn't even listen to her to be with her. And verse 12, he fled from her. So we might say Joseph was not gentle with his emotion. He held firm against his emotions if they were there to do what Mrs. Potiphar invited him to do. And then don't be confused about the immediate results. We mustn't be confused when our Mrs. Potiphar, if we ever have a temptation, keeps coming back to tempt us after we've said no. And that's what happened to Joseph, because it says, you know, day by day almost, every day, whatever it was that we read in the text, say no to temptation, whatever kind it may be. It doesn't banish temptation forever. It may come back the next day or the next minute. Be prepared to say no again and again and again. The battle of saying no to lust is really won or lost in our attitude towards sin. Before we walk into the spiritual battlefield, two things. First, we must equip ourselves with the four helpful suggestions that we gave, that we discussed. Don't be weakened by your situation. Don't be deceived by persuasion. Don't be gentle with your emotions. And don't be confused by the immediate results. Second, think through the three categories of temptation that we listed and ask this one decisive question. Has my battle been that I'll not sin very much? Or has my battle been, and should it be, I'll not sin at all? In the area of material temptation, in the area of personal temptation, or in the area of sensual temptation? We'll leave it there with this question. Are we resisting temptation like Joseph did? Flee from it. Stand up against it. Remember that is God that is watching, no matter who else it may be. All of us are tempted. In some way or other, we are tempted. But like Jesus, we can overcome that temptation. For there is no temptation taking us, but that we can stand. And it's by God's word being in our mind. I know you've heard it time and time again, that when Jesus was tempted in the wilderness by Satan in Matthew, 3 times Satan came to Jesus. And he said, if you're the Son of God, do this and this. And Jesus 3 times said, it is written. And that's what Joseph had in his mind. He knew who his God was. And it wasn't Potiphar. And it wasn't Potiphar's wife. Resisting temptation is a part of our battle. Number 600 and something. You had it backwards? Number 27 in the red book. We'll sing while we stand.